Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Drafting relief pitchers, I thought used to be kind of easy, especially in a shallower league. Things have gotten a lot more difficult now, and on today's show, our relief pitcher preview, we certainly have to focus on different formats and different strategies. What do you do if it's a saves plus holds league, for example? Or maybe just don't play in those leagues, but a lot of people do. Welcome to the Relief Pitcher Preview. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White and Heath Cummings. No Chris Towers today. Heath told me that Chris hates me and hates relief pitchers and didn't want to be on the show.
And doesn't like Scott very much.
Oh, okay.
It all checks out.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. I don't know where Chris is, but he'll be back on Monday when we will start recording, by the way, at 8:30 in the morning and getting these podcasts out a lot earlier. How you feeling about relief pitcher this year, guys?
Love it.
I have nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea.
Ooh. But how do you feel about relief pitchers?
Wow. How graphic. I think it's going to be tricky and certainly a position that I've come to prioritize a little bit more over the past couple of years. You guys feel the same way? More important now?
Like, I have, I think, always prioritized it the most on the podcast and not always been right in doing that. And I am pretty close to where I've been in the past. I know Scott has generally been more of a waiter, and I think
he called servers now, Heath. Servers.
I'm kind of at a philosophical crossroads here because relief pitcher, you know, I'm all about it, it's kind of what Tears is about. I'm all about building in opportunities to wait in a draft and still get comparable impact, you know, further down. And relief pitcher was always the place where I could count on doing that because saves are saves and you pretty much knew who was getting them going in. And, you know, it wasn't so clear where within the closer ranks the volatility was going to present itself. So I was very comfortable waiting there, and now I'm not. And I haven't totally figured out what I think is the right approach to kind of the new world where we're dealing with here, where more and more teams are legitimately buying into the idea that there doesn't have to be a singular guy devoted to the ninth inning, that it can be more of a committee. There was always talk of that, but last year was the first time where I think we really saw managers follow through with it, and now even more are talking about it. So it's kind of scary. There are the dedicated, confirmed closers, and there are those that aren't. And unlike in past years where you trusted some guy would emerge eventually in a bullpen, I don't think you can anymore.
Yeah, here's a stat that sort of sums it up. Here are the number of 40 save relief pitchers over the last four seasons. 40 saves. 5, 6, 3, 3. All right, that's whatever. How about 30 save relievers over the last four seasons? 20, 16, 11, and 11. Ooh. So that means to me that you no longer, or I no longer am like, well, he's on a crappy team. I don't really want him. Because if it's a legit closer who's going to get most of the save chances on a bad team, like Shane Green. I don't want Shane Green because he's not good, but like Raisel Iglesias last year had 30 saves or a little bit more than that, and the Reds weren't that good. He's a good pitcher. So it doesn't eliminate those guys, and it puts those guys in a tough spot. You know, do you want the primary closer on a bad team or a maybe better pitcher like a Sir Anthony Dominguez on a good team? But anyway, we'll get all into that. We do have to talk about Bryce Harper. Let's take a few minutes now away from relief pitcher. And if you're listening, today is March 1st. Hey, welcome to March, everybody. Season's about to start, 3 weeks away. If you're listening at a later date, you're going back in time, you can skip all of this if you'd like. But we just finished our outfield preview, and I think we all sort of felt at one point that Bryce Harper was going to be a Philly, and then recent news indicated maybe he wasn't going to be. But he is a Philly, 13 years, $330 million. Anything changed with you guys with Bryce Harper and where you're ranking him?
I didn't actually move him in my rankings because I already had him so much higher than the consensus. And you know, maybe I could talk myself into moving him back ahead of Yelich after just moving him behind him. But he is right there at the end of my first round. I think 12th overall, maybe 13th overall in Roto. This is obviously a good scenario for him. Great park. It's a much better scenario than San Francisco would have been, where he probably would have been moving him down. And I think, you know, I think he still has the upside to be the third best hitter in baseball if he can stay healthy and be consistent.
I moved him up a couple of spots because I was baking in a little bit of concern about San Francisco. Not much. I've got him 9th now in Roto, 8th in points. And I think he has number one overall potential.
You have him 8th overall, right? And 9th, yes. Not an outfield. Yes. Yeah.
Right. And like, I don't think park factor matters too much to a hitter of Bryce Harper's quality, except for a place like San Francisco or if he'd gone to the Yankees. But there is a significant difference in the park home run park factor between his new park and his old park. His old park in Washington was 5% worse for left-handed power hitters than the average park. This park rates at a 108 for left-handed power hitters. This is a fantastic spot for him and a fantastic lineup. If he stays healthy and is good Bryce Harper, he's right there with Betts and Trout.
Except steals, right? Scott, I know you were concerned about Segura's steals with Gabe Kapler as his manager, and we never know what Harper's going to give us in steals. He has an 18 steal season, a 21 steal season, 13 last year, but 4 the year before, 6 in 2015. Give me a best guess on steals with Harper.
8 to 10.
I was going to say 6 to 10, but I do think the best version of Bryce Harper in this park is well ahead of Trout and Betts and home runs.
Yeah, I think the question is it who's the fourth outfielder off the board? I mean, I think a lot of people are going to go, well, who's the third? It's for you, it's JD Martinez, but it's Trout, Betts. Then I, you know, you guys are going to be Martinez. Some people might take Harper there. And then Scott still has Yelich ahead of Harper, I believe.
I've got Harper.
Well, I mean, the industry consensus, and I don't know, maybe it's changed drastically with him signing here. Though I think it's hard to justify changing it that much because of Heath's point that a player of Harper's caliber, you know, park effects only go so far. But you're factoring in the downside too. I mean, clearly Harper has a lot more downside than some of the first round hitters. But yeah, his ADP, I think, is 20th overall right now. I suspect it goes up, but I don't think it goes up all the way into the top 12.
And if you're debating Yelich or Harper, you know, it's not to say that Yelich doesn't walk and doesn't have a good OBP. He had a 402 OBP last year. But if it's an OBP league instead of batting average, or any league that counts walks, I'm going to go with Harper there, because you know that batting average might be one thing that drags him down, but you know he's going to get on base. You know he's going to have good plate discipline. And that, you know, that would be something that would give him an edge, in my book, over Yelich. And
we don't know what his batting average is going to be.
Right.
It might be something that drags him down, or he might be amongst the league leaders.
Exactly. I know. But I think
it's just crazy.
But we know Yelich is going to have a good batting average. Yeah. Harper, we think when he's healthy, should have a good batting average. He's awesome, and I'm excited about him. He should not be the 20th pick, that's for sure.
I don't rank it that way either. I'm excited by what it means for the whole Phillies lineup, because you look at who figures to be the top four in that lineup now. In some order, it's Andrew McCutchen, Bryce Harper, Reese Hoskins, JT Realmuto. All high on base guys.
I think, the really interesting part for a couple of guys, and one of them, I think, just suffered an injury, and we'll see how bad it is. But I've seen projections with both Cesar Hernandez and Gene Segura hitting either first or second, and yeah, Realmuto in the fifth or sixth spot. If one of those guys ends up sandwiched between McCutchen or just ahead of Harper, that's going to change their value pretty significantly.
I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, I think Segura scores 110 runs if he's batting first or second for the Phillies. And would be, because he averages almost 100 runs as it is. And he'd be, I think, among the league leaders. All right, so Cesar Hernandez hurt his hip. That's what Heath was alluding to. We don't know the severity of it right now.
It was great. It's a grade one, so that's the lowest grade.
Okay.
That's positive.
Toronto signed Bud Norris to a minor league deal, which could be significant because he was not bad last year as a closer. And I mean, Ken Giles is kind of an example of where I feel like Ken Giles is a guy who's going to be on a bad team but could get 30 saves, and that could make him top 12. But Bud Norris, minor league deal.
You saw what happened with Ken Giles yesterday, right?
No.
Four runs, two hits, three walks, no outs.
Whatever.
but that's what Ken Giles, like, he has.
Was it a save situation,
like
Heath?
I don't know.
It was definitely not a save situation. He did not blow one save last year. Strangest season in relief pitcher history. Toronto signed Clay Buchholz. We can talk about that if we need to on the starting pitcher preview, but he was, like, surprisingly good last year, and Atlanta's got some injuries in their rotation. Mike Soroka is not going to be in the opening day rotation. That could open the door for Tuki Toussaint, but also Mike Foltynewicz and Kevin Gausman. They have hopefully minor injuries right now.
And Luis Gohara.
And Luis Gohara. Wow. So, Scott, 15 seconds on the Braves rotation. Go.
Well, they had more than a rotation's worth of arms competing for the fifth starter job, so I think it might be a little exciting if, and it doesn't sound like any of these are severe enough to keep them from being on the opening day rotation, except for Soroka. But if it does, like if all these players have a short DL stint to start the season, that's going to give more audition time for guys like Bryce Wilson and Kyle Wright, who had a great first spring start. And it might be kind of fun. It might give the Braves a chance to vet these guys a little further, pick the right one.
Okay, so let's get back to relief pitcher here. We, of course, will look at ADP, competitions, format changes, all that stuff. I gave the stat about the amount of 30 save relievers over the last four seasons. I'll just give it again. 20, 16, 11, and 11. So 30 saves is pretty good these days. And then just to know that, you know, the correlation between being on good teams and getting save chances and being on bad teams and getting save chances, I looked at the top 10 teams last year in save opportunities, bottom 10 teams, basically good teams at the top, bad teams in the bottom. There are some exceptions. The Nationals had surprisingly low amount of save chances. The Indians had the ninth fewest. The Indians, it's so weird. I feel like they're always low in save chances.
It is weird.
It's really weird. The only sub 500 team, I think, that was in the top 10 in save opportunities last year was the Giants. They were ninth. But it's no secret. Good teams get more save chances. All right, let's start with this. I know this is unusual. Never done this before on a position preview, but I want to go through every single team as of March 1st. And, I mean, this could be really quick. Could be a one-word answer, two-word answer, first name, last name. And you just tell me, is there a set closer? So let's start in the National League East. I'll give Scott the National League East. Atlanta Braves.
No,
it's not going to be.
It's between Vizcaino and AJ Minter, and I think Vizcaino will get the lion's share, but I think Minter could overtake him, and I think there could be some lefty righty stuff going on.
Miami Marlins.
No, between Sergio Romo and Drew Steckenrider, I would think Steckenrider has the leg up, but Don Mattingly he's one of those managers who's kind of said he's not looking to have a dedicated closer.
Mets. Yes.
Yes.
Edwin Diaz.
Yes.
Phillies.
Definitely not. They got David Robertson, who's more proven in the role than anybody they had last year, but Gabe Kapler just doesn't buy into your bullpen roles. Mm-hmm. So I don't see Robertson getting 30 saves this year.
Hector Neris was great down the stretch last year after a bad start. Dominguez will get some saves.
Sir Anthony Dominguez, yep.
There was a report today that they could consider Kimbrel.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that might. I wonder if that would be enough to win Kapler over to the designated closer.
You would think so.
I would think Kimbrel wouldn't sign there if he wasn't assured that, but who knows?
Nationals, Scott.
Yes, Sean Doolittle.
All right, Heath. Would you like
that? Was what, 2 of 5?
2 of 5, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to tally the teams so far that have set closers, Mets and Nationals thus far. Heath, would you like the NL West or Central?
I'll take the Central.
Okay, Cubs.
Yes, to start the year, but no overall. Pedro Strop is going to be the Cubs' closer at the start of the year.
Yes, Pedro Strop, five straight seasons with a sub-3 ERA for the Cubs. Cincinnati Reds.
Yes, Raisel Iglesias. Even though he won't get all the save chances, he is their closer.
So you think I could put that on the list?
I think he's a yes. He had 30 saves last year.
I'd put it on the list.
Okay. Brewers. LOL.
No. Not at all. They have like five guys who would be very good closers, and there's at least two, Jeremy Jeffress, Corey Knebel, and Josh Hader, who should be drafted and will get some saves, but I would be surprised if any of them get 25.
So I think, what do you think, that Corey Knebel would have the best chance of being the closer? Do you agree with that?
He's certainly being drafted that way. He's most proven as a closer. I think you look at what he did in September after coming back. It was ridiculous how dominant he was. And yet Jeremy Jeffress was getting the saves in September and had a really good year himself. So, Knebel's the first. Well, you know what?
Hader's the first one.
Hader's the first one, yeah.
But we don't think he's going to be the closer. He's too valuable.
No, he won't.
Right.
If anybody's going to take the job and run with it, he's the least likely. Hader.
Yeah, Knebel, September, no earned runs in 16 and a third, three walks, 33 strikeouts. And then in the postseason, he pitched 10 innings. He gave up one run, 14 strikeouts, 20% swinging strike rate. The reason why I'd prefer Knebel over Jeffress is Jeffress is a ground ball pitcher, so his whip is a little high. You know, he had a 1-2-1 whip last year with a 172 ERA. So he's going to hurt you a little bit in that category. Okay, Pirates.
Yes, Felipe Vasquez will be their closer.
They are on the board. Cardinals.
No, although Jordan Hicks has got off to a good start in the spring, I think has the best chance of being the closer. They have Andrew Miller, and there was again some speculation that if Carlos Martinez can't be a starter, that might be really bad for Jordan Hicks.
John Brebbia also not bad, underrated pitcher there. So they have options. All right, so far we have the Mets, Nationals, Reds, and Pirates. Although this isn't to say that these teams won't have a set closer at some point. Like Jordan Hicks, as he's mentioned, he could get the job, right? Just
they,
as a
they
now,
have
we don't
said
know.
They're going to play it based on matchups. Mm-hmm. So I think Andrew Miller probably has 5 to 10 saves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do the Scott NL West and start with the Diamondbacks.
No, though I think they will have one. It's between Greg Holland and Archie Bradley. My money's on Holland.
How about Colorado? Yes.
Wade Davis. Yeah.
Dodgers, Kenley Jansen.
Yep.
Padres. Look at the NL West giving us three teams, right? The Padres?
Yeah, I don't totally trust because Andy Green has gone the committee route in the past, but I do think it's Kirby Yates. I would put him in the yes column.
All right, we're putting him on the board. Yes, and San Francisco.
No, they don't have a set closer, and I'm not totally confident they will. Mark Melancon is challenging Will Smith there. It should be Smith, but Mark Melancon is owed a lot of money and is supposedly healthy finally.
7 out of 15 teams in the National League, Mets, Nationals, Reds, Pirates, Rockies, Dodgers, Padres, we feel have a set closer as of right now, March 1st. Heath, give me a division you'd like to talk about in the American League.
I'll take the Central.
All right, cool. Let's go with the Central. Chicago White Sox.
No, but Alex Colomé does currently have the a leg up on Kelvin Herrera as the closer, but it's not been determined yet.
Cleveland Indians.
Yes, Brad Hand. Bird in the hand.
Yes, we like Brad Hand. Detroit.
Yes, they have a set closer to start the year. No, I don't expect he'll keep the job for the whole year. Shane Green is not very good. Joe Jimenez, I think, could be good. So I like Jimenez in AL-only leagues as a late speculative source. But Shane Green is their closer at the start of the year, so yes.
All right, they are on the board. Detroit. Kansas City.
No, and Ned Yost has been pretty vocal about not having a set closer. I would expect right now that Brad Boxberger is going to lead the team in saves. Willie Peralta is also there and got some saves last year. And then the dark horse that probably won't make the team out of spring training is Richard Lovelady.
All right, and then Minnesota.
No, and I think I disagree with the consensus on who it's most likely to be. They've got Blake Parker. Trevor May is the most popular source. They have a couple other guys as well.
Trevor May's strikeout to walk rate last year, fresh off Tommy John surgery, by the way, where you'd normally expect control issues. But his strikeout to walk ratio was phenomenal, and he did. I mean, it was only three saves, but he was closing at the end. So I do think he's their best option. But yeah, that I feel like is the most wide open of any of the races.
I'm betting on Blake Parker, but you don't have to take him until the very end of the draft.
And this one's sort of exciting, the Twins, because they could be good. They could be solid, you know, like a 500. You guys feel that way? They could be a 500 team? Or?
Oh, I think mm-hmm. they are like one of my sneaky teams to like upset a huge favorite in a division.
Okay, yeah. The huge favorite's obviously Cleveland. But Trevor May had a 3.20 ERA, but he made one start and it was terrible. If you just look at his relief appearances, he had a 1.85 ERA, a sub-1 whip in 23 relief appearances with 5 walks, 36 strikeouts, and 24 and a third. So I know Scott very high on Trevor May. Heath is leaning Blake Parker there, but okay. So that means we have just Cleveland and Detroit. All right, Scott, let's do the AL East. Baltimore.
They're saying no. But I don't see who else it would be other than Michael Givens.
We can't call him a closer, though, because they're going to win like 12 games.
No, he's a closer. He's a closer. You haven't listened.
I'm going to put Givens in the yes column, but I would understand if somebody didn't want to.
Red Sox, no, there are no. But who are we looking at?
Matt Barnes is the stated front runner. And he certainly has the strikeout ability of a closer. I think he had like 14 per nine last year.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a high BABIP or something that kind of inflated the numbers. Or maybe
he walked 4.5 per nine. He's definitely not a control artist, Matt Barnes.
Right. He had some walk. And yeah, there's that too, but I don't think that's prohibitive for a big bat missing closer. But yeah, there's also Ryan Brazier, who doesn't miss many bats. And I think it should be Barnes.
Okay. Yankees, yes, with Chapman. Rays, definitely not a yes, but who are we looking at for the Rays?
Definitely not. They were among the teams that were most into the committee last year, but Jose Alvarado, like, there's not really anybody who has a clearer claim to it than him. He's left-handed, which I think hurts with a manager who's already inclined to go committee, but Jose Alvarado is clearly the best option.
Yeah, I noticed, I mean, guys that I really just didn't know much about. Diego Castillo, Chaz Rowe, Ryan Stanek, they had good years for the Rays.
Yeah. Yeah, Castillo's interesting. They also have somebody who hasn't debuted yet. I haven't committed the name to memory yet, but he's been turning heads this spring with how hard he is to hit. I think he's another left-hander. I'll see if I can find the name here real quick, but you can go ahead and ask me the next team.
Toronto.
Yes. It looks like Ken Giles is the guy there, at least for as long as he can keep it together, which, I mean, he has good stuff, but obviously it went horribly for him in Houston, and I have a hard time making a big investment in him because of that.
Ken Giles in save situations, 0.35 ERA, did not blow one save. Ken Giles in non-save situations, 9.12 ERA. It just weird. It's just weird.
Colin Poche, P-O-C-H-E, I think that's how you pronounce it. That's the reliever in the Rays bullpen, the lefty, who seems like he could factor into the closer mix. He had 110 strikeouts in 66 Ooh. Innings last year with a 0.82 ERA.
Poche Spice, team name Tuesday on a Friday. All right, finally, Heath, the American League West, the Astros.
Yeah, the Astros definitely have a closer,
Roberto
a full-time
Osuna.
Closer.
Yep.
My current number one closer, Roberto Osuna.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is.
Really?
He's first in your relief pitcher
he's
rankings?
He's first in my relief pitcher rankings.
Ooh, nice. That's yeah, I didn't. I feel like that's not a bad call, and he doesn't get drafted.
Well, he doesn't miss bats nearly the level of the Kimbrels, the Diazes, the Chapmans.
That's true. He certainly didn't last year. All right, so Ozuna, so Houston, yes. The Angels.
Yes, they acquired Cody Allen, and there could be some concern that he doesn't keep the job, but he's currently a top 12 closer for me right now.
Oakland, yes, with Blake Treinen.
Yep. Texas, and they have like seven other closers just in case he gets hurt.
Texas, yes, with Jose Leclerc, which means are we going with a clean sweep in the AL West with Seattle?
Not yet. I think there's a good chance if we did this podcast in 2 or 3 weeks, the answer would be yes. I think that they have not, I've not heard anything out of them saying they don't want to. Hunter Strickland is the leader as the closer. Anthony Swarzak, if he gets healthy, has a chance to compete for that role. But I'm expecting it to be Strickland.
In conclusion, if we don't include Seattle, out of 30 baseball teams, we have established that right now on March 1st, 16 teams have a set closer. This really changes the way you draft. So let's get into it. Let's talk about how we're drafting closers. And do you have a set rule? I want one of my top blank closers.
Well, it sounds like 16, right? And not even that, because I don't fully trust Giles. I actually trust Cody Allen a little more.
He's not on. Oh, he is on here. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I have to get one of my top 15, I feel like, in either format. And, you know, it'd be great if I could get two. I think sometimes in a roto league, I want to do it in a points league, but in a roto or categories league, if one of Diaz or Trinan, who are my top two, if they slip to like round seven, then I'll be willing to pay up for them. And then there's a very good chance I'll get them and somebody like a Jose Leclerc or Kirby Yates and end up with two of that group. But I would, I feel like I have to get one.
This is so dependent on format. In roto, I really would like to have two of my top 17.
Okay, well, let me take a step back and talk about the formats, right? So head-to-head points leagues, for us, it's always five starters, two relievers. And right. Among the relievers, you can use starting pitchers who are eligible there, like Carlos Martinez, Tyler Glasnow, Kenta Maeda, Colin McHugh, and they give you a leg up, and we'll touch on that. So you're talking not a huge urgency, at least in the past when we had a lot more set closers. Things are a little bit different now, but more options in head-to-head points leagues. Heath just said roto. You know, our standard roto is nine pitcher spots, anything you want. Now, I think a lot of people used to do 6 and 3. I think I'm more inclined to start the season with 7 and 2 and then just see kind of what develops on waivers. I don't know. You know, Heath, what would you, so you said two of your top 15 in roto?
Yeah. And then I want another guy late that I think is going to get some saves. I want to start 6 and 3. There are drafts. If starting pitchers go early, I may end up 5 and 4 and I'm okay with that.
And, but that doesn't necessarily mean four closers, right?
That might include a Josh Hader or an Andrew Miller.
Okay, right.
Which, when we're talking about our top 17, in a head-to-head, Josh Hader might be there, but I'm not counting, or in a point, or categories, I'm not counting him as one of the guys that I want. I want to get two guys that are getting saves, that I feel good about getting saves.
So what about a head-to-head categories league? These are the trickiest ones. I mean, this is like, we could do a whole podcast based on head-to-head category strategy.
Well, yeah, and it's 100% dependent on your starting pitcher requirements, your innings limits or minimums. In a wild, wild west type situation, I'm very fond of just going RP heavy. I'm probably going to try to get one of the top 5 or 6. I'm probably going to get two of the top 12, and I'm going to stockpile guys with good ratios and just try to win 3 out of 5 pitching categories.
Meaning in a league with no specific pitcher, a head-to-head categories league where you don't need to start a specific number of starters or have an innings minimum or anything. Yeah, right. It's
wild,
not
west
a bad idea.
Which is the format I prefer for head-to-head categories, but I'm the only one on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like it, but I have certainly, Scott and I think have certainly warmed up to that strategy in that format when you don't need an innings minimum or set starting pitchers.
Which is what it is in our For the People podcast league.
Yeah.
You guys think you're going to make the playoffs this year?
Yes, I do. Now that we know to just load up on relievers. Yeah.
I my confidence is shattered in that league.
But it doesn't
normally take me this long to figure out how to be good at a game. But
back to the points league discussion. I'm not really concerned about relief pitcher in a points league. If one of those top 12 guys really falls, I'll go after him. But I'm really happy with Kenta Maeda, with Tyler Glasnow, with Colin McHugh. And even as my second RP, I'm fine with Brad Keller. And don't forget about Julio Urias.
All right, Scott, get in there. Talk strategy at closer, reliever.
So, like I said, I have to get one of the.
We started with Scott talking strategy about relievers.
Well, but not in formats. No. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Not okay, format so, specific.
So to reiterate, one of the top 15, one of the leaving out Ken Giles, one of the ones we know is closing. And that's true in all formats. In a points league, I'm still comfortable waiting as long as I can to fill that second relief spot, unless there happens to be a sparp who lasts longer than I expect, like a Tyler Glass now or Kenta Maeda. And, you know, if I get them at a good value, fine, sure, I'll capitalize on that. But you know, it's hard to build up a big enough starting pitcher staff too that I don't necessarily want them confined to my relief pitcher spot. So even if I did draft one of them, I would still probably take a guy who I thought was going to be in line for saves but wasn't totally sure late. I mean, it's easier to do in a points league because you don't care so much about what the ERA and WHIP looks like. You just want them getting saves. And two, there are, you know, every team has only two relief pitcher spots to fill. So there are going to be some who don't get drafted at all. So that's how I approach points leagues. In Roto or a Wild West categories league, I would be more inclined to go 6-3 still, or even 5-4, like Heath was saying, than 7-2. Because part of the trade-off with more teams going with committees at closer is you kind of need to get a competitive save total. You might have to divide it between more spots with guys like Josh Hader and Andrew Miller. Not all. I would still prefer to go 6-3, but 5-4 is something I've done before. You know, maybe like Jeremy Jeffress is my ninth pitcher. And, you know, then at least you're doing well in the ERA and WHIP. You're hopefully going to be competitive in saves. It hurts a little in wins and strikeouts, but everybody's kind of in the same boat as far as that goes.
I just want to reference the head-to-head points league that we just did. And who our closers are. Mine are Chapman and Wade Davis. I did not want, I feel like Wade Davis fell a little bit, but I did not want to be weak there. I guess I don't feel quite as confident as you guys and just, well, I shouldn't say that. I feel like you can use the waiver wire to deal with that second relief pitcher spot, but I like the value for Davis. So I have Chapman and Davis. Scott has Iglesias and Leclerc, and Heath has Trinan and Corey Knebel. So, Knebel maybe won't work out. All right, so you'll go to the waiver wire. I'll try to find something there. But I'm sure it was a late pick. I also drafted Ryan Brazier, I think, and Matt Barnes. Is that right, or is that a different draft?
Knebel might have been like my 21st round pick. He really fell in that draft.
Yeah, I took Brazier with my last pick. So, because I'm a Brazier guy, I feel like he's better than Barnes. I know the strikeouts aren't as good, but it is a toss up. No, Barnes is the favorite. So maybe I should have taken Barnes. Anyway, I have Chapman, Heath has Trinan, Scott has Iglesias. I invested most heavily on a second closer. Scott has Leclerc as a second closer. Heath has Corey.
Which is
Knebel.
One of the 15 guys. So I got two of the 15 guys in this league.
Yeah. All right. So there's that. And then, you know, in Roto, like a standard Roto league season long, just counting the stats in each category, it's different than those Wild Wild West leagues because you don't want to punt wins and strikeouts. Like, you cannot punt two categories. That is, I think, a bad idea. So, none of us do that. So,
no.
Although, Heath, I feel like you did something similar to that 2 years ago, like half the year you did that and then you transitioned.
I kind of did something like that last year. I started 5-4 last year, which isn't punting, but it is sacrificing. And then I ended up with three relievers for most of the second half.
And you won the league. I ran away with it. A lot of people are playing in saves plus holds leagues. How do you change in a saves plus holds league?
I don't go very hard after saves, probably. If you're not getting somebody who you think has a shot at 40 saves, then I'm not sure it's really worth it because there are so many pitchers out there who can provide holds. They never provide them in as high, like the league leaders in holds are never as high as the league leaders in saves, which is why, you know, I want 40. If I'm going to, if I'm going to pay for saves, I want 40.
Right. Right.
But there's so much, the league leaders in holds, there are many who are basically in the same range.
And talent matters more, and talent always matters the most, but the guys like Sir Anthony Dominguez and David Robertson, guys like Knebel, Hader, and Jeffress, they all get elevated in the saves plus holds league because they're probably going to get both.
And another guy who I think would benefit, or another situation, is when you look at the Diamondbacks guys, like Greg Holland. He's useless to you if he doesn't win the job in a saves league. But in a saves plus holds league, okay, he's worth drafting no matter what.
The only question is Greg Holland still good?
I think he is.
Yeah, because that
is a question.
To Heath's point, you have to prioritize, you know, because basically every good reliever is getting holds, right?
Yes.
They're
going to
be
right.
Between 15 and 20 holds, maybe even more. So the very best relievers are the main ones you're targeting, at least once the huge saves guys are off the board.
So maybe that's not the best example, but the point is, if you're worried, if you like a pitcher, and you're just worried about, oh, he's not going to get the saves. Well, you don't really have to worry about that as much in a saves plus holds leagues.
Somebody like Jose Alvarado.
All right, so I think that covers strategy. We'll do some sleepers, breakouts, and busts, and then we will get into we have to probably talk about SPARPs for sure, and we'll get into ADP. And we're coming right back after this short break.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Okay, so when is the earliest you'll take a closer? Let me start with that, or a relief pitcher. When's the earliest?
Round 7.
That's what I've been looking at too, and specifically in a categories league. I don't think I'd do it in a points league. I could see myself doing round 6 if I just hated everything else, but so far that scenario hasn't come along.
So you're not getting Edwin Diaz?
I've come very close.
Early.
I've come very close to getting Diaz. I've had drafts where it was between him and one other guy, and I went with the other guy. It's been cut, like, I assume he's the consensus number one. He's first in ADP and everything. I feel like he should be. But
by far,
there have been drafts where I've seen Trinan go first, drafts where I've seen Kimbrel go first, drafts where I've seen Chapman go first. Never seen Ozuna go first, Heath. But,
that's what I love about him.
Yeah. Nice. But yeah, it's there doesn't seem to be much consistency, at least based on my personal experience.
Okay. Yeah, and Diaz, 48th in ADP. Next up is Trinan, 62nd in ADP, and there's a little bit of a run as soon as Trinan comes off the board. Of course, every draft's going to be different. SPARPs. So who's your top SPARP that's starting pitcher as relief pitcher? Who's your top RP-eligible starter?
I've got Glasnow just ahead of Maeda right now, and they're separated from the field.
But you have Carlos Martinez still ahead of all of them, right?
No, I've buried him.
Wow.
Well, not, I don't know if I buried him. I still have him ranked ahead of the consensus, but.
Okay. I still have him ahead, obviously much further down than he was at the start of the year. I'm very concerned he's not a starter this year. But if he's not a starter, there's a good chance he's factoring into the saves mix. And of course, there's still a reasonable chance he is a starter, in which case he probably has top five potential as a reliever. So I keep him first for now, but I want him at a big discount.
Who are the Sparps that get drafted?
Martinez, Glasnow, Maeda.
McHugh.
Yep, Colin McHugh, who's only RP eligible right now, but five starts in, he'll be SP eligible. Looks like he has a job already locked up in Houston. In
Keller.
Yeah, Brad Keller. I mean, in a points league, you don't care so much that he's not getting the strikeouts. Great ground ball pitcher. Should get innings. Woodruff. Brandon Woodruff, I've seen start to go a lot in points leagues.
And an interesting point on Woodruff. There was a report out of Milwaukee yesterday that Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, and Corbin Burns are all on equal footing in that competition. And they all have potential as Sparps.
All of them. Okay.
Well, Peralta's not.
Peralta's just a starter.
Yeah, but Corbin Burns would And so would Woodruff. I would still bet it's going to be Woodruff. He started their first playoff game. He has the most major league experience, but who knows?
Ross Stripling gets drafted sometimes. Julio Urias is going to get drafted now. Mm-hmm. Yanni Chirinos is just RP eligible?
No, I think he's dual.
Okay.
He's dual.
He gets drafted occasionally too.
Ryan Yarbrough, probably even more than Chirinos.
Yeah, but he's hurt now.
Okay.
All right, then. Let's do sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Scott, who's your favorite sleeper reliever this year?
My favorite sleeper reliever... I'm not sure which of these to classify as a sleeper. Probably Jordan Hicks. I have... You know, Carlos Martinez could mess it up. I don't think Andrew Miller's going to mess it up. I think... The way they describe how they're going to use Andrew Miller is kind of how Cleveland used him, which was never as many saves as we were hoping for. And Jordan Hicks, there's a lot of momentum with his slider, the development of his slider. He's now the hardest thrower in baseball ahead of even Aroldis Chapman. And that slider looks like it has big swing and miss potential. Hicks is a guy I like drafting a lot, either as my second close reliever if I'm, you know, going the budget route, or sometimes even third. I feel pretty safe with him. But I also consider Matt Barnes and Greg Holland to be sleeper favorites of mine, because if they do win the job, I think they'll be full-time closers.
That's a good job covering all of the possible sleepers.
Well, there's one that Scott didn't say that he's talked about in previous episodes that I feel like you should have on your sleeper list, and that's Pedro Strop, because you seem to feel like he's got a good chance to just take the job, keep the job, and have Brandon Morrow be a total bust for fantasy. That's kind of how I interpreted what you said.
That seems
you want to throw
plausible.
Three or four names out there before you ask me who mine is?
I mean, I only expanded on one, so you can expand on any of the others.
Go ahead, Heath. Who are your sleepers?
I'm just giving one because the notes say sleeper, not sleepers.
You could see it.
You know what? I think Cody Allen is still being drafted too late. And I expect that he's going to be a borderline top 12 closer, probably top 12 in rotisserie. He may get beat by a couple of the Sparps in points leagues, but he had a bad year last year. I'm still willing to bet on the track record. I don't think he just lost it at age 29. And I expect the Angels to give him every opportunity to be the full time closer.
Unless he's going to be Scott's breakout, I would have also thought Trevor May would show up in the sleepers, but who's your breakout, Scott?
Yeah, I haven't been drafted. I like the skills of May. I haven't drafted him anywhere because there are just too many bodies there. It's a little scary for me. This probably doesn't fit into the breakout, under the breakout
here
moniker.
Here is a not breakout.
as neatly. Well, I mean, any of the last three I gave, you could call a breakout. But I just want to throw some love Jose Leclerc's way, because I don't think he is getting drafted as high as he should, especially now that we know Chris Woodward has said he is the closer. His ratios were elite last year. He was in the top five in most every category you could care about for a pitcher: FIP, I don't think strikeout rate was quite top five, but it was very good. ERA, hit rate. His hit rate is ridiculous. He's like 2 years in a row now, less than 5/9. He's dominant, and he's a full-time closer. And if he's my number one, that's good enough for me.
Yeah. There's one red flag with Leclerc. His walk rate in three seasons, 7.8, 7.9, and 3.9. Now, if he made an adjustment, because down the stretch, last 29 games, he had only 8 walks in 28 and two-thirds, and he had a .63 ERA. He was amazing.
I think the key number you said was 28 and a third. That's like four starts.
I mean, what was his
but the whole season? The whole season was 3.9, so that's perfectly fine.
Overpowering. I mean, most of the closers we think of as overpowering, dominant, elite bat missers totally shut down. Began their careers with control issues. Chapman certainly, Kimbrel certainly. I don't think Diaz did, but most of them did. That's just kind of what that comes with the territory when you have that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think their bullpen stinks. So I mean, like Jesse Chavez, Sean Kelly. I'm not sure that he's going to lose his job if he struggles early, but I also think the Rangers kind of stink. So, but like we said, 30 saves is pretty good these days. And all right, so Heath, breakout.
I'm going to go with Brad Hand, and he's been awesome for 3 years in a row. 3 years in a row with an ERA below three. 3 years in a row with a lot of appearances. 13.3 K per nine last year, and now he's got that Cleveland job all to himself. They've really kind of chopped saves up a little bit in Cleveland, and they have had that weird thing where they don't get a lot of save opportunities. I don't think that's a strategy thing. Like, I don't – the chopping them up is definitely a strategy thing, but they don't have anybody there – to really challenge him. So I'm going to go with Hand. I think he gets 40 saves this year.
I would honestly say they didn't really chop it up until last year because Cody Allen just wasn't that good. Like, Cody Allen pretty much always had the job. Miller would get an occasional save, but I think that bodes very well for Brad Hand. Like, you're right. He's the guy. Three straight seasons with a sub-3 ERA, and his K rate, 13.3 last year, took a nice little leap. Did you say that?
I said both of those things.
Well, I knew you said the ERA.
I didn't know you said
the K rate. Okay. did you say that his hit rate, 6.5 last year?
No.
Okay, good. Bust. Heath, give me a bust.
I'm trying to look at ADP here because it's really like, I'll give you the bust. I think it's Edwin Diaz. And it's just because of how much further ahead of the rest of that group he's being drafted. Last time I looked, he had a late fourth, early fifth ADP, and everybody else was going in the seventh. I don't have any interest in paying that much for any closer. I think it's very unlikely that he's the number one closer again this year, and he's being drafted as if it's a surefire thing. I'm fine with ranking Edwin Diaz as the number one closer. I think that makes sense in a lot of regards. But if it should be as just barely better than that group of elite closers. He's not going to save 57 games again. I'll go with Edwin Diaz. It's kind of the same argument in football as the Jacksonville defense being a bust last year.
Yep, there you go.
So, Scott. Disappointment more than bust, probably, right?
Well, if you spend a fourth round pick on him, then he's the number six closer this year. I think that's a bust.
Okay, Scott, who's your bust?
So I'm worried Kenley Jansen's just going to completely bottom out. He's my bust pick. I have not drafted him anywhere. I skip him when it gets to that part of the closer rankings. He obviously wasn't healthy last season. He was, you know, he had the heart issue he was dealing with, but I don't think that totally explains the diminished stuff in terms of velocity being down, strikeouts way down, swinging strike rate way down. He was able to salvage his season as it went on, but not in a way that corrected all of those numbers, more in a way that corrected ERA. And if it continues, if this is start of a downward spiral as opposed to just then this is now the new normal, I don't see this ending well.
Yeah,
and maybe as soon as this year.
I'm totally on the fence there because I get that he had a 19% swinging strike rate in the postseason. You know, he finished strong. He finished poorly.
19% swinging. I assume that's Fangraph's swinging strike rate, right?
Baseball Reference, but I think it's the same.
Well,
it's not. I'm pretty sure.
No, it's the same. Believe it or not, it's the same. If you look at the game logs and do a, you know, from this point,
it's the same on game logs. You're right. But if you're just sorting by like league leaders.
Yeah, that's just the postseason. He's changing his off-season spring training, his routine, excuse me, to try to get better results. But I see the problem. You know, what really scares me is that he's pitched in six straight postseasons. It's a lot of work for him. And I don't think you have to draft him, because if you feel better about other guys going in that range, like Chapman or Kimbrel or Ozuna or Trinan, they're all going right around the same time as Kenley Jansen. So I don't think you're stuck drafting him. Okay, I'm going to give a bust and a sleeper on the same team. Bust Wade Davis, sleeper Senwano. And I'll draft Wade Davis. I'll draft him, but it's getting a little worse.
I find
worse.
Myself getting a lot of shares of Wade Davis. I think he's pretty safe. The ERA was kind of inflated last year, but that's what happens at Coors Field sometimes. It only takes a couple bad outings to really leave a crooked number there for a reliever. Otherwise, I think Wade Davis did a fine job in his first season as Rockies closer, and they're paying him too much. And I don't think Senwano is nearly as good, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, it would be more of like Davis.
Man, Scott hates you.
67% strand rate for Wade Davis, very low. It's not a great bust call. It's not a great bust call. But one of these guys, like,
no, I get it. You're probably not the only one calling him a bust. I'm happy to take him at the discount because I think the saves will be there.
Okay. So let's talk ADP. I know we're really late in the show to start doing ADP, but we've talked about a lot of guys. So Edwin Diaz, 48th overall. Blake Trinan, 62nd overall. Well, that's the beginning of round six in a 12-team league. And once Trinan comes off the board, we have Trinan, Kimbrel, Jansen, Chapman within 10 picks. Trinan, Kimbrel, Jansen, and Chapman. How many of them are you concerned about performance-wise? Or health wise, like, how many of them are you nervous about drafting in round six?
Jansen for sure. Well, in round six, I wouldn't take any of them, but Jansen for sure. Chapman always, I think, is a little bit of a health concern, and I'm a little worried about Kimbrel. The fact he hasn't signed yet. How much longer is this going to go on? I'm just afraid of another Greg Holland situation where he waits too long, doesn't have enough time to get ready. And particularly since we've seen him have bouts of wildness in the past and just having a really hard time getting going, Kimbrel.
I'll go ahead and just throw the other name in there. I'm a little worried about Trinan. He was phenomenal last year, but he's also 31 years old and was completely different in virtually every way than he's ever been before last year. I mean, he was a guy every year of his career before last year below 9K per nine. Yeah. Every year of his career, he was, except for 15 games in 2014, he was 3 walks per 9 or more. And all of a sudden, he's just a world beater. And it's like we talk about with relief pitchers, that was an 80-inning sample size.
Yeah, it started – Trinan is similar to Kirby Yates in that it started late in 2017. Yates started throwing a splitter in September of 2017. Since then, he has been awesome. Trinan – he got traded to Oakland. I don't know what changed at that point, but he had a 5.73 ERA with Washington. The second he got to Oakland, 2.13 ERA, and he did have a strikeout per inning, 42 Ks in 38 innings. Last year, you know, 0.78 ERA. He was actually the number one closer.
But even that 2017 in Oakland, it was 42 strikeouts in 38 innings. That's a pretty big difference from 100 strikeouts in 80 innings.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was a lot better last year. But I guess it just sort of started.
I don't know exactly what changed for him either. I mean,
he was good in 2016. I just wanted to say that. Go ahead.
His sinker, he throws a sinker that approaches 100 miles per hour and gets a lot of movement, and it's considered one of the nastiest pitches in baseball. I don't know why it wasn't before last year. It's certainly, I mean, you see it. You can understand why nobody can hit it. I don't know what exactly changed, if he just started commanding it better. I honestly don't know. But it's hard to look at the numbers he put up, and it's hard to watch him pitch and think this might not be sustainable. Like, he looks as good as the numbers.
Well,
yeah, he did last year.
Well, yes. Yeah, so Trinan, Kimbrel, Jansen, Chapman. Round six pick is a pretty significant investment. Are you in on this group, or do you want to? You said round seven's the earliest you'll take them.
I'll take the one that goes last.
Yeah, it's like we have concerns about them, but you could have concerns about like every player. They're still attractive to draft.
Like, where's Brad Hand going?
Brad Hand is going. Sorry, I will look. It's not in my notes, so I will look on Fantasy Pros right now. Hand is going not long after 82nd overall. So like another.
I'd rather
round.
Have Hand at 82nd than any of those guys there.
Okay. All right. So after those guys, it is Osuna and Hand and Felipe Vasquez.
Yeah.
6, 7, and 8 off the board. Osuna, Hand, and Vasquez. We haven't really talked about Vasquez. He's pretty good. Pirates were better than expected last year. But yeah, how do you feel about them? Maybe we shouldn't focus too hard on where they're going in ADP, since we just feel like these closers are going a little early, based on what you guys
said. I like all of them. I think Osuna may be going a little bit late. I think Hand's going right about where he should. I think that they're all three going to be very, very good this year.
You're not concerned, Heath, about the lower K rate for Roberto Osuna, 7.6 after 10.0 and 11.7 the years before.
I'm really not. It was, I mean, a weird year for obvious reasons for Osuna, and he got a late start on the year. I'm not particularly concerned about it.
Okay. Scott, did you want to weigh in on those three? They were Osuna, Hand, and Vasquez, 6, 7, and 8 off the board.
I have very few concerns about any of them in terms of retaining their job and getting saves. So yeah. they feel like, you know, if you don't get one of the elites at a good value, they feel like fine number one options.
Yeah. Okay. So 9 and beyond, we'll go 9 through 12. Raisel Iglesias, Josh Hader, Sean Doolittle, and Wade Davis. Raisel Iglesias, Josh Hader, Sean Doolittle, and Wade Davis.
Sean Doolittle is the one I don't understand.
I do.
His numbers are elite. Yeah, he's had health issues.
That's it.
But not any, like, you know, it's, you know, so has Aroldis Chapman, you know?
And Doolittle had a broken foot, right? Like, Chapman has recurring knee issues. So I get it, man.
Right. Exactly. Like, I have Doolittle as my number 6 reliever. I have him behind the big four. Well, I mean, I know it's different for Heath and I, but I consider the big four to be Diaz, Trinan, Kimbrel, Chapman, and then there's Jansen, and then there's Doolittle for me. And I feel like if he stays healthy, he could be the number one closer in baseball.
Do you think Washington is like a, you know, 85 plus win team?
Yeah. I'm not so sure. I mean, it's going to be tough to figure out how the AL East finishes this year to predict.
The top three are really tough. And I think 4 and 5 are pretty easy.
Who is 4?
The Braves.
Okay.
Oh, the NL East. I thought you said the AL East.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't think it's that simple. Of course, I am the Braves fan. You're that confident the Braves will finish 4th?
I think maybe they'll be better than the Mets. I think the Nationals and Phillies are both quite a bit better.
I think the Nationals are 4th.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the Nationals on paper are worse than last year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they traded out Harper for Corbin.
All right. Let me speed it up here.
Yeah. We're getting sidetracked.
Yeah. All right. So Doolittle, 11th off the board. Iglesias, Hader, Doolittle, Davis. That was the range that goes from 97th overall to 118th overall. Any beef here? Anybody you're excited about? Anybody you're not excited about? Gosh, I just don't
really.
I just don't think I'm drafting Hader this early when there's still saves on the board.
Yeah, I get that. I think this is the right range for a Hader to go in.
I don't ever draft him though.
But right, exactly. I don't ever draft him either. I would rather wait a little longer and get Yates or Leclerc.
I'm much more likely to draft Hader in a head-to-head categories league.
Yeah. Okay, so then after Wade Davis at 118th overall, we get to 120th overall. Kirby Yates, Jose Leclerc, 120th and 121st.
I prefer Yates. But they're both fine closer options, and this is about the right range.
Now we're 14 in, and you guys definitely want to have one of these guys. We're actually really 13 in if you don't count Josh Hader. 13
right.
Closers. And then Ken Giles is next at 135th overall.
And I don't like counting him because I have so little faith.
Right. Cody Allen comes up in a few spots.
Love it.
We're basically,
I will count Cody Allen.
We're basically out of, like, set closers at this point. 140 picks in.
Yep.
So we definitely want one and maybe two at this point. But then, okay, so Ken Giles. Heath, how do you feel about Ken Giles?
I am concerned. I mean, he's my number 19 relief pitcher in Roto right now, and that's behind a couple of Sparps, so he's probably more like 16 or 17, but I don't feel good about it.
Okay, then we have Corey Knebel. A lot of potential there, 145th overall, but that is pretty high in the draft, so if he doesn't get, if he's not the closer, mm-hmm. it might disappoint you.
If any of the Brewers relievers are their full-time closer, they're top five.
Yeah.
You know, Knebel was my number four heading into last year.
Okay, then Jose Alvarado.
Too soon.
Archie Bradley.
Definitely too soon because I don't think he's going to win the job. Though if he does, he's probably the only guy getting saves.
They are terrible, though, aren't they? The Diamondbacks?
That's too strong.
No, they're not terrible at all.
They have a dreadful lineup.
I don't think so.
It's not a good line.
They lost Pollock
and Goldschmidt. They have a pretty good starting rotation.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think they'll be below 500, but I don't think they're going to be, you know, falling short of 70 wins or anything like that.
Okay. It's a bad lineup. I wouldn't call it dreadful.
All right. So Scott, why is Aroldis Vizcaíno not the closer, and how likely is it that he will be the closer?
I don't think it's very likely he will be the closer. I think if anybody's going to be the undisputed closer for the Braves, it's more likely to be because they're passing the torch to Minter than because they want Vizcaíno to have it. They really like AJ Minter, and they've never been totally warm on Vizcaíno in the role. Vizcaíno has health issues. They had about the same number of saves last year because Vizcaíno missed some time. And just the fact that it's a lefty-righty thing, I think, makes it pretty easy for Snitker to say, okay, some days it'll be Minter, some days it'll be Vizcaíno.
So who would you rather draft? Forget about ADP. Who would you rather draft, Vizcaíno or Minter?
I would rather draft Vizcaíno because he's the righty. And so in a split situation, he would get the majority. But he is – if he's my second closer, I don't feel good about it.
Heath, how do you feel about drafting both Brandon Morrow and Pedro Strop? They're both going about 230th overall.
Not great. I don't think somebody's going to draft Morrow and then hold on to him through the entire time it takes for him to get ready to take this job away from Strop. So I'd rather just draft Strop and then pick up Morrow when they drop him.
But you just put him on the DL, that's all. And then he comes back and maybe he's the closer.
Yeah, I don't, there are certain players that I am pretty keen on the whole draft and stash on the DL thing. Brandon Morrow is not that caliber of player.
What? Really? I mean, the last 2 years, he's been awesome.
I mean, I don't want to draft. I've said the same thing about Didi Gregorius.
Yeah, but I don't think Morrow's out till the All-Star break. I mean, he could be out a month. All right, fine. You know what? If you feel that way, then honestly, like Pedro Strop at 233 is a huge value.
I kind of feel that way. Yeah. It could be just a month for Morrow, but I feel like it's a timetable that could continue to grow.
How do you feel about, okay, Michael Gibbons? I'm just going to read the closers who are coming off the board now. Jordan Hicks, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jordan Hicks, Minter, Morrow and Strope, Michael Gibbons, Colome, Jeffress, Shane Green, Steckenrider.
I think Jeffress is a value, and Colome probably too.
You think? Do you guys feel who's going to win that job for the White Sox?
Colome.
I mean, Herrera's still recovering from injury, so that I think makes it pretty clear.
And then just 41st off the board, Matt Barnes, and then Brazier later. I mean, you want to talk about taking two guys? It's not that expensive right now to take Barnes and Brazier, and just see who wins the job.
I think the report that Barnes is the favorite kind of caught people by surprise, so maybe we haven't seen that ADP adjust yet. I feel really good about Barnes. I know you don't, Adam, but when I took a closer look at the numbers, the things I thought were bad about him weren't as bad as I thought, and the things that I thought were good, I underestimated. I think he could be a really good closer.
Yeah, I like guys, I guess, with better control. It just seems like it's easy for things to go wrong when you're walk prone. He's never had an ERA below 3.65 or a WHIP below 1.22, but it does seem like Barnes is getting better. And, all right, what else we got? I know we're going real long here, but...
Yeah, we got an auction ready.
Oh, crap. Okay.
So thanks for that.
All right, we'll finish up. Well, there's Will Smith. He's like an afterthought. He's the 60th reliever off the board. Blake Parker, 61st.
Among full-time relievers, I think I have this stat right, Smith had the fourth best FIP among all relievers. So it'd be great if he's a closer, even on a bad team, but that Melanson thing is annoying.
Yeah, Willie Peralta. Like, Melanson. God, it just feels like Melanson's time is done. These are good options. What are you going to lose if you take these guys late? I'm not sure that we're going to say that you should make your draft strategy to just take all of the iffy closers late.
No, you have to use 7 roster spots.
True.
No, I do invest in Will Smith a lot because in a categories league, if he's not the closer, he's the guy who had the fourth best FIP last year. So he's still a good player to have in your lineup. And in a points league, if he's not the closer, well, there's probably someone else who is on the waiver wire.
Right, exactly. Okay, any other final thoughts?
Nope.
Go enjoy your auction.
All right.
All right, I'm sorry I kept you. Greg Holland.
No, it's okay.
64th off the board. Sleeper.
The podcast comes first, Adam.
It's only 10 minutes. It's only 10 minutes late. 11 minutes late. All right, for Heath and Scott, I am Adam. We will come back on Monday, 8:30 in the morning. Podcast should be out by no later than 10:30 in the morning Eastern time. And have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.